What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast, hoping not to get the sack for Christmas. Coming up, all square in the Old Farm, five-star Watford pump pitiful Preston, it's up the Arris for Cambridge, and there are some absolute drubbings in League Two. This is What the EFL, and it's our pre-Christmas pod, guys. That means that Adrian Clark's come suitably attired. Tell us about your Christmas jumper, Clark. It comes from your vast collection.
Yeah, well, yeah. It feels like I'm the only one that likes Christmas out of us three. Like, I've got about six Christmas jumpers. I mean, how many have you got?
Maybe one at the back of a cupboard that was bought by an...
Sam's got none.
None. Cool. I had a QPR onesie, which kind of passed as festive fun for a few years. You know, like walking around the gaff in it. Don't know.
Am I a little bit sort of outdated? Am I a bit old school with the Christmas jumpers? It feels like people are moving away from them.
I think you're bringing some much needed frivolity and joy to the podcast.
I will let you into a little secret, because neither of you rocked up to this, I don't think. The Athletics Christmas party at the end of November, which I think was... It was a Christmas party, but it's not a Christmas party because the reason they did it is because it's cheaper in November to hire out venues, basically. So it was labelled a festive get-together or an end-of-year party. I went in my Dennis Bergkamp Wonderland Christmas jumper, and I was the only person out of, I reckon, 200, maybe 300 people in the room, and I felt like an absolute dick. It was a good icebreaker because everyone wanted to talk to me, but hated it. Absolutely. Just read it all wrong, Matt. Well, have you ever done anything like that?
You might have been walking in a Dennis Bergkamp Wonderland on your own that day, but
let's get it right. We want to slaughter him, really, but we're being nice, aren't we, Matt? But my house does look like Chevy Chase's from Christmas Vacation, and we had some friends over for dinner at the weekend, and they're giving up a few years on me, let's just say. I think they're late 30s, and I referenced Chevy Chase just as they were leaving. Sorry about the gaff, by the way. You know, I don't normally have lit up gingerbread men and lit up Santas crawling up the chimney, etc. And they just looked at me like I was bonkers. Never heard of National Lampoons. Never heard of Chevy. And not only did I make a fool of myself there, but yeah, my house looks like a bad American 80s Christmas film.
Glad to hear it.
Well, maybe we'll put some photos on social. That's Sam Parkin, by the way, who I didn't get around to introducing. I know Chevy Chase primarily from his acting work, but also as rhyming slang. Ryan Lowe had egg all over his Chevy Chase. That's what I'm trying to say, isn't it? We'll get to that later. We're going to do our weekend review starting in the Championship next. Right, we're going to kick off in East Anglia. It finished all square in the first such derby between Ipswich and Norwich in 5 years. Both teams led. Ipswich scored the final goal of the game to take a point against the Canaries. It maintains their 10-point buffer between themselves and third-place Leeds. Sam, you and I caught the end of this game in the office before our game at Stamford Bridge on Saturday, and you were saying Ipswich just need to hold out for the point here and just keep that gap. That's what they did, right? And obviously they wanted to win it. First game in ages between these two, and they were favourites going into it, but you definitely don't want to lose it.
Yeah, it's a blow, and it's sore for the Ipswich fans because they're so good at the moment, and there's such an amazing atmosphere at the ground. We saw that with the scenes before. Everyone turning up and the blue smoke and what have you. So 14 years and 7 months is quite a long time in football not to beat your rival. But I felt that the emotion did play a part, and I said last week on the podcast that I felt there was such a gulf in class between the two teams that I didn't think it would be that relevant. But I thought that the Norwich players raised their games. I thought they defended their box well at times. I thought there was fight and desire. Some things that have probably been lacking from their game. And you saw from David Wagner's staff when they scored a goal and the celebrations at full time, what it meant to them getting a point. So it was sore for the Ipswich fans because it is their time, it feels. But I just felt with all that emotion in the last 5-10 minutes when me and you obviously were watching the game, don't lose it. Don't lose it. Take the point. You're in a brilliant position in the Championship, and a point against your rivals is not a disaster. And let's get it right. For half an hour, this was just a continuation of what we've seen this season. They should have been out of sight. created far and away the better chances, golden opportunities as well for Broadhead, who was a menace. I watched his dummy back this morning on the one-on-one that he missed.
That was nice. Yeah.
He didn't actually even really move his body. It was almost just like a head dart, which sent one of the Norwich players to the deck. It was beautiful, but he just couldn't convert. But yeah, they should have been two or three up. And obviously the Jonathan Rowe goals took the sting out of the atmosphere a little bit. And it probably summed up the game quite well, because they were a mess, weren't they? The Norwich goals, horrible goals. Long throw from Nunez. We haven't seen that so far this season. And I suppose a little bit of Ipswich's defensive deficiencies come into the fore. And I thought, yeah, those two players in comparison, Broadhead had six shots, I think. You know, real standout performance from him. Nearly won it with that curler at the death. Jonathan Rowe will get all the headlines, all the plaudits in Norfolk. Only had 15 touches in the game. The fewest by any outfield player. Hernandez came on for what? Just over 20 minutes, had 14 touches. So it wasn't a great Jonathan Rowe performance, but what a season he's having. 11 goals after no starts previously in the Championship. It's incredible. And just one tactical thing, as I could be all day, I was so surprised with Norwich's setup in the first half. I mean, we know that they've loved having kind of the wire players inverted throughout the campaign, but you don't do that up against Leif Davis and Wes Burns. I thought the fullbacks in the first half got zero protection. McCallum was much better in the second half for Norwich, and I think Hernandez, probably part of that reason, was to give him a little bit of strength down that side. So much better second half, but very lucky to get away with the point after what me and Clarkie probably predicted. Yeah. Nearly came true, that Ipswich dominance in the first half.
Yeah, no, we got it wrong. I thought Ipswich would batter Norwich. So well done. Credit Norwich for showing that resilience. Another two goals conceded at home by Ipswich. What would you do, Sam, if you were Kieran McKenna? Because it's a good cushion. It is a really good cushion. And I don't think you want to fiddle too much with what's going on inside the opposition half. I don't think you want to mess around with the central midfield. Would you go out there and invest in two new defenders? Because I think that could be what they need. I think it's a quality issue rather than tactical.
Don't quote me on this, but I think they're going to lose Luongo, Burgess and Morsi. Combination of probably suspension and international call-ups during the same period. Mm. Maybe I'm being speculative with
Morsi. So maybe a central midfielder as well then.
So they're going to be a little bit light. I read something this morning that says there's bunts to splash on a striker. So I think that's still the area. Yeah, I think that's still the area where the fans would be in agreement, and the conversations have kind of revolved around for the last probably 6 months, maybe longer. Don't think there's the faith in Ladapo maybe to be the deputy. So I expect them to improve. But yeah, absolutely. It would seem funny for them to change too much, wouldn't it, in terms of the setup, because it's so good. But yeah, I suppose you've got to question the solidity defensively, because it's just the reoccurring theme, really, isn't it?
Ipswich going to Leeds this weekend. Big game that. Norwich now unbeaten in four. We mentioned poor old Ryan. Got to be feeling low today. The Preston boss watched his team get dismantled in their own backyard on Saturday. Watford beat them 5-1. Particularly galling, Clarkie, because they were 1-0 up and Watford scored four times after halftime. I mean, that goal sort of seconds after the restart may be the killer, but this is a difficult one for Ryan Lowe to try and defend, isn't it? It's an absolute whooping from a Watford side who looked like they well positioned for a playoff push second half of the season.
Yeah, good use of whooping, I think. Thanks. First and foremost. It really was, wasn't it? What a weird season for Preston. But let's talk Watford. We haven't given them that much airtime this season. I know a few Watford fans, and I worked with one at the weekend, and they are quietly confident that they're heading towards the playoffs. And I get it. You know, look at their recent run of form. Last 12 games, 6 wins, 4 draws, 2 defeats. But who are they against? The top two. Everyone loses to the top two. So Watford are in good nick. Only one team, Ipswich, have scored more goals from open play than Watford. This is Valerian Ismail, remember, a manager that was renowned for long throws, set pieces, etc. Well, he's got a nice balanced style of play now at Watford. He's got a lot of technical players, and he's showing that he's got more to his game than just that. only three teams have faced fewer shots than Watford. So at both ends of the pitch, they're doing well. In this game, they scored some great goals, didn't they? I mean, Kayembe from outside the box. Beautiful pass from him as well for Bayo. Lovely hit from Kone from about 25 yards to put the seal on it. Mateus Martins ran onto, I think it was a Kone pass. That early goal in the second half, he's a good player, isn't he? Mateus Martins, I think he's a real talent. And they left out, by the way, their top scorer of this game. Rajovic was left out. And they also rotated maybe their most talented young player in Yasser Asprilla. So they've got depth, haven't they, Watford? And even though we haven't talked a lot about them this season, I think that this performance and the body of work that led up to it suggests that they're in with a shout. They're definitely in with a shout of promotion via the playoffs. There's no way they're gatecrashing the top two. But yeah, for Preston, it's one to forget, isn't it? There too many of these home losses. Not enough clean sheets. I mean, just barely any. You know, for Preston this season, and that's the cornerstone. If they're going to be successful, Preston, it has to be built around clean sheets, because they're not flushed with an abundance of flair players. Frustration, I think, from some of the fans at some of Lowe's decision making. I think Frocchia was on the bench again, didn't come on. They weren't too happy with the way that he went about his work. But this was about Watford, and a terrific performance from them.
Watford flying, Preston just one win in six now. Now, I'm not one to crow, listener, but you remember how I said Southampton were good and these two mocked me? Well, they've marched their way up to four now, courtesy of a 14-match unbeaten run. Blackburn, their latest victims at St Mary's, in what was the first league meeting between these two since 2005. Sam, you can give us some proper analysis, but I just want to say I really enjoyed Alcaraz apologising in celebration after his rubbish Panenka penalty, and then he scores the fourth late into the game, and he knows that he can't run off going, brilliant, look how good I am. Yeah. He just has to say, sorry about the penalty, by the way.
Yes.
Two things straight off the bat. I'll have to hear the audio of me saying Southampton aren't any good. I don't recall ever saying that. Clarkie came for Russell Martin early part of the season.
Came for Russell Martin. I didn't say they're rubbish. I just said that he needs to change things. Maybe he has.
And secondly, one of my pet hates, people having a go at people that do Panenkas. What? Why? Like, you know, when it goes in, people still seem to have a go at them. It's fine. It's absolutely fine. Especially at, what was it, 2-0? Or maybe 3-0 by then. So no problem. Against 10 men. That is absolutely fine, Alcaraz. Do it again next time. I encourage you to do so. Now, they're in brilliant form. And, you know, if we're still talking about Leeds naturally having an opportunity of getting in the top two, then Southampton should be in the same conversation, because they're, you know, 14 games unbeaten. Best run for 40 years or whatever. And yeah, they were helped here by Callum Britton's sending off, but this was a very dominant display, some outstanding performances, some, you know, squad players, if you like, some bit part players really coming to the fore. Adozie in the last few weeks. Stuart Armstrong, excellent. Really good win with him in the team. And the system's very interesting. And I kind of got an early glimpse of this, the Leeds game, which started off this run with a kind of false nine. They're not playing with a striker. Mm. They haven't played with a striker kind of since that stage of the season. And they've got three off the top of my head, really good strikers. Obviously, maybe Stuart not available at the moment. But Adam Armstrong plays wide on the right-hand side, essentially, but makes really cute runs infield to get in on goal. Adozie is an out-and-out left winger, really. So you could call them really split strikers. And then they've got Stuart Armstrong or Alcaraz when he comes on, playing as the kind of furthest forward midfield player. So it's based on possession, of course, and people like Aribo, Stuart Armstrong, down small, but they're really good, really comfortable in possession. And this system with the flying fullbacks, you know, my love for Kyle Walker-Peters, which has just developed this season out of nowhere. It's a system that's pretty easy on the eye and teams are really struggling against. So yeah, fantastic run, thoroughly deserved victory. And having had this brilliant run, five on the spin at home, next six games, play one team in the top 10, which is Norwich in 10th. And beyond that, they play two in the top 10 in the next 11. and they play all of the bottom four. So this isn't going to stop here. You know, if they can get through the next month in similar vein, they're going to be with Ipswich's game, Leicester to come, Leeds to come, I think other way round. There's some massive games at the top of the table. So Southampton could be closer to that top two.
Adrian, you were rightly critical of their decision to tweet after the match with Saintsmas. We ought to, as much as we've praised them there for their recent turnaround, we ought to give them a bit of a public
happy Saintsmas. I mean, what's that? What is that?
You could go with Saint. I mean, if they'd won 2-1 with a last minute goal, then you got Saint Nicker point. You know, like St. Nicholas, but
I'm thinking Saints are in like the Christmas like ballpark anyway, aren't they? Like
they are because are they of not? St. Nicholas.
St. Nicholas, yeah.
Bail me out here, man.
Happy Saintsmas is not a thing. I'll come on, what are they doing?
No, it's not. I was thinking there's something, there must be something better. It must be.
Do better, admin. Anyway, let's get on to Hull versus Cardiff. Remember, Clarkie, when Derby sacked Liam Rossini because he didn't have the right amount of experience to manage them in League One. That's not worked out brilliantly, has it, for Derby, but it certainly has for Hull. My goodness me, he's got them really ticking, hasn't he? And he did this without the top scorer, Jaden Philogene. Sam's muse, Scott Twine, got a goal for himself. And Aaron Connolly looks like he's finally found a home. It's all looking good for the Tigers.
It's looking great. And the fans are turning out in force. I think this is the second game running where over 20,000 turned up at the MKM, which is way above average. You know, I've been there a few times and... Yeah, they're just the normally under 20. You don't have the top tier open. I don't think that's still open, but it's filling up. And it's filling up because the football's good and they've got a team. They've really built a team with Liam Rossini, who's been given a new contract this weekend. He's agreed terms on a deal, I think, to 2026. He's earned that, hasn't he? He's proved himself, no doubt, to be a very good tactical manager. I've mentioned it before on the pod, but they're the only two teams that pass the ball better or hog the ball more than Hull City or Leicester and Southampton. You know, they're the next closest by far in terms of knocking the ball around, being patient with their build-ups, you know, good interchanging of positions. And I really like what they're doing in this game. They just outclassed Cardiff in every department. It was about the energy and the press when they didn't have the ball. So Cardiff were absolutely smothered by the hard work of the front guys in particular, all of them, Tufan and Twine and Delap, etc. They squeezed the life out of them. And then in possession, they showed their quality. And they've got a lot of quality. I think that midfield too of Jean-Michel Seri and Tyler Morton's really looking good at the minute. Brilliant ball. I don't know if you've seen it from Tyler Morton. It was a little bit Gerrard-esque, I want to say. And for Tufan, he said just drills it about 60 yards over the centre half, and he runs through and lobs the goalkeeper. Scott Twine, I think, scores his first free kick for Hull. I'm not sure he's got another free kick for them, but we know he's got that in his locker. So yeah, it's exciting, and you know, good young players, aren't they? Obviously, with no Philogene in the starting lineup here, you've got Morton, outstanding central midfielder, Scott Twine, real developing talent, Tufan, we don't know that much about. Okay, Connolly's a little bit older now, but I think he's enjoying playing in the team, and Delap, who can be a centre forward, is doing a really good job, a little bit like Armstrong at Southampton, as a wide right striker that sort of can create, but also drive in and be that second centre forward. So yeah, well done, Hull. It was diabolical from Cardiff. I've got to be honest, I bigged up Cardiff a fair bit earlier on in the season, but when I saw them in the flesh, I really wasn't impressed. I don't know what's happened to change things, but don't look like scoring goals. And they were scoring a lot of goals prior to the match that I went and saw them in, and they got beat. So, this was a really lame effort from Cardiff. And the manager basically said, if this is what it takes to get in the playoffs, we're nowhere near it. So a fairly honest assessment from Bullitt. But for Rossini and the team, they're in the mix, no doubt about it.
Yeah, Hull 6, Cardiff sliding down the table. They're in 12th. They've lost 4 of their last 5 games. Before we move on from the Championship, I'd like an opinion on this, which might be extremely dated by the time the pod comes out. But, Adrian, John Percy, very well-informed Midlands-based football reporter for The Telegraph, tweeted half an hour ago, our time, Stoke have had talks with Plymouth over the possible appointment of manager Stephen Schumacher, regarded as a very strong contender. Appointment process still ongoing. John Eustace and others also in the mix. Would this be a wise move for Stephen Schumacher? Because my immediate thought was no, it would not.
I wouldn't do it if I was Schumacher. A lot of good managers have gone there and done nothing. I think there's something rotten behind the scenes. I don't know enough about Stoke City, the way the club is run, to really comment, but not with authority, but they've just not made any strides, have they? They've not got a philosophy. They've sort of bumbled along for it for a number of years and paid a lot of money for good managers and they've been unable to get consistent results. I'd want to do my homework on the people that I was working with at Stoke before jumping ship. I think he's doing really well at Plymouth, and I think he will keep Plymouth up. And the longer he keeps Plymouth in the division, the more suitors Stephen Schumacher will have from elsewhere. And I think there are more attractive jobs out there than Stoke City for somebody like him personally. That's my initial reaction. Don't touch it.
No, I think I agree with you, Clarke. It's interesting what you said, because I did some reading on kind of Alex Neil's tenure last week, and I think the Stoke fans felt like last spring, when they had a really good run under him, that they were kind of playing real high energy, high pressing football. And I think that's been the remit. So whether they've recruited in that manner in the summer, I would anticipate so. And then obviously the form, the results have been terrible, and it's not been aligned to that form of late season last year, hence why Alex Neil's lost his job. So I think there is a kind of philosophy in place, or I think the hierarchy believe there is.
Okay.
I'm with you, I've not really seen it this season, and my hunch is that there are problems that remain, and it would be too much of a gamble for Stephen Schumacher to go in there and hit the ground running. I was asked about him and the Sunderland job last week, and I kind of dismissed that as well, just thinking he's got such a good thing going at Plymouth, Argyle, they're going to stay up this season. His quality will get him a job in time. And then I kind of thought about it afterwards, and I thought, oh, it's still Sunderland. It's still a massive club, and the massive jump, I would presume, you're going to get in salary. I think that one would be tempting for him, but I think Stoke, probably because of the problems of the last few years, I think we're on the same page. I think that would be too much of a risk for him.
Yeah, Sunderland's more attractive than Stoke. The attacking players have shown how exciting they are as well. The thing about Stoke, I've just looked at the numbers. You're bang on. That statistically, they're the best pressing team in the championship. Yeah. They, you know, teams don't string that many passes together before Stoke, you know, disrupt them and win the ball back. They get a lot of high turnovers, but translating that into winning performances and goals has been a problem for them.
All right, well, we'll keep an eye on that one. And yeah, congratulations to Neil Warnock on getting the Stoke job about a minute after I press publish on this podcast.
I mean, if I was Stoke, he would definitely be under consideration.
Yeah. All right, we're going to head to League One next. Well, Adrian's got Peterborough pegged for a top two place in League One. And if we ended the season today, he'd be right. They didn't exactly batter the Cod Army on Saturday, but a 1-0 win at Highbury, enough to put them into the automatic promotion places. They struggled to take their chances against Fleetwood, I think it's fair to say. Darren Ferguson alluded to as much afterwards, saying that they need to be more ruthless. But they got the job done, son, Sam. That's the main thing. And if you can't score more than once in a game, make sure your defence is tight and you're going to win it. And they're in a good run of form at the moment in all comps.
Yeah, I feel like I'm so easily swayed and pleased. Like, I spent 5 minutes in Darren Ferguson's company at a game last season and spoke football with him. And now, like, he's the second coming of Guardiola. Like, yeah, love the guy. But I do look at the 11. I think it's a really attractive side. I do, you know, throughout all the units, really nice midfield with Kipriano and Collins now. Some standout defenders. The concern is they got Chiozzo on loan from Rotherham, and Edwards is still there, who gets loads of speculation about his future in every window. So that will come again in January. So they could possibly lose two of their shining lights defensively. But as ever, it's that front three, isn't it? And Ephraim Mason-Clark, Poku down the other side, and Ricky J. Jones playing down the middle at the moment, which I think is the biggest talking point and the most interesting thing about them, because Clark Harris is obviously sitting on the bench and very different players. J. Jones has got a lot more mobility. He's going to stretch the game a bit more. He's a bit more unpredictable. Clark Harris is all about what he does back to goal, and obviously a brilliant taker of chances. But J. Jones missed a couple of great opportunities in this game to make it an easier route to 3 points. So he gets a little bit of flack, but I think it's pretty interesting the way that Darren Ferguson's going about it. And yeah, probably just touching on what we were with Stoke, it's the high energy that he wants. He wants the mobility in the forward players. And Ephraim Mason-Clark, Poku together, I mean, 25 goal involvements. And Jay Jones has got 8, 4 goals, 4 assists. So it's working. They're not conceding. 4 clean sheets in 5, 6 wins in 8 now, and over the last 12, I think, just 2 fewer points than Pompey. So this is a really good team who, at the start of the season, I wasn't entirely sure what we were going to get from Peterborough, but unquestionably they're going to be in the mix now for automatic promotion. And on the flip side, it's taken me a little bit by surprise this morning, Fleetwood, 6 defeats on the spin, all comps, 4 in the league, not scored. So this is very much after, I wouldn't go as far to say to describe it as a honeymoon period, but he started okay, Lee Johnson. This is a real tricky spell for him.
Some other Peterborough news. Darren McAntony is again their majority shareholder. He's bought back most of the shares he sold to the Canadian duo Jason Neal and Stuart Thompson 5 years ago. Sorry, Adrian, I spoke over you there.
No, sorry, I spoke over you. No, Streaky Lee, isn't it? He's throughout his whole career, he goes on these crazy winning runs or unbeaten runs, and he has these losing streaks too. It's weird.
He can turn it around. Neil Harris, he's off and running at Cambridge. His team took top marks against Blackpool. They came from behind to win 2-1, their first league victory since the end of October. I just had a quick look at the stats on this one, Clark, and it felt quite Harris-like that they had less of the ball but won the game. That's quite often been his blueprint, right?
Yeah, exactly. And Cambridge know their place in the sort of hierarchy of League One, I guess. And I think that I don't think anyone expects them to be a possession-heavy team under Neil Harris. It's going to be similar to under Mark Bonner, with good organisation being at the heart of it, but maybe a little bit more bravery, a little bit more attacking panache from Neil Harris. I think what's happened tactically, he's not asking the wingers to sort of double up and come back and sit on the toes of the fullbacks a little bit like Bonner was, which kind of hamstrung their attempts to break at pace and to score goals. What he's doing is getting the central midfielders to shift across, help the fullbacks out and to cover them, and trying to leave up one of the wingers alongside one of the strikers so that when they do win it, they can break a little bit quicker. And I think that was the story of the game here. Brophy in particular had a lot of joy down the left-hand side for them. Andrew and Brophy worked really well together. Ahadmay up front was sort of at the heart of this win. He scored the scruffiest pen you'll ever see. I mean, he properly mishit it. He just smashed it into the ground. It was crap, but he put it into the back of the net, so it doesn't really matter. I think he missed a couple of good chances. So there's frustration at Ahadmay, but he's also got that pace and got the running power to sort of stretch teams, and I think that's why Harris will use him in the coming weeks. So yeah, I think they're doing all right. There's something weird going on in League One. We've not talked a lot about Shrewsbury. Shrewsbury have scored 13 goals and got 27 points, over 2 points per goal. I don't know how that's possible, but Cambridge United are kind of, they're like Shrewsbury light. They've only scored 18 goals in 21 games, but they've still got 24 points. So Shrewsbury and Cambridge, just really good game managers. You know, they know they're not going to score many goals, but they don't get blown away too often. They just pick up points here and there. And yeah, they frustrated Blackpool and held firm in this game. Weird choice from Neil Critchley. I don't know if you saw this from him. He decided to rotate two of his best players, Ekpiteta and Kenny Dougal, stayed at home. They didn't even travel. And he was asked after the game, what's wrong with them? What's the problem? He said, oh, nothing. Just rotating these players. So I found that very odd. And it's quite a brave thing to say when you've just been beaten at Cambridge United. But I guess there's a busy schedule coming up and he's looking at the bigger picture. But yeah, he might want another go at his team selection, Neil Critchley.
Yeah, I'd like to know if there was a Blackpool Christmas party last week and maybe that had something.
Yeah, the defending was not good. I think the back three was edgy, to say the least, in this game.
All right, well, there were some edgy defences in League Two as well. We'll talk about those next. So, run of six games without a win in all comps, culminating with defeat at home to Aldershot in the FA Cup last week, meant Stockport boss Dave Challoner shuffled his pack ahead of the visit of Sutton on Saturday. I think it's safe to say that it worked. They won 8-0. If you were one of the Sutton 94 who travelled, we feel your pain. Biggest win in 89 years for Stockport. Obviously, brilliant for them and devastating for Sutton, Sam, but also must have been a blow for your Barrows, your Wrexhams, your Mansfields as well, thinking, oh, Stockport, they're on the ropes a little bit. They're wobbling, aren't they? Actually, they're actually just beaten Sutton 8-0.
Yeah, weird looking at some of the statistics coming into this game because they'd only won 1-8, hadn't they? And obviously, yeah, humbled by Aldershot in the cup. And Sutton had been on their, I think, their best run of the season. Five matches unbeaten, four draws in there, granted. And, you know, a lot of obviously very narrow games. So you maybe would have anticipated this being a bit of a struggle for Stockport, maybe. But yeah, to the contrary, it was a resounding victory. Quite quickly, like looking at the highlights and the statistics, kind of made sense of it. He'd been a back four recently, went back to the three, which has served them well. Obviously, Noyle's been a bit in and out. He was back in the team at wing back. And Madden's been playing as a 10 behind two strikers. And he went back up front with Wootton. We know that partnership was brilliant last season, very fruitful, but he was still dropping really deep and picking up the ball. And he was actually involved in a few of the goals, getting turned. And Stockport already have that three-man midfield, which is very good. One of the best structured midfields, I would think, over the last 12 months in League Two. Sutton United play a 4-4-2 with a two in there. So Madden dropping in there, it just looked incredibly problematic when you've already got three good midfield players. Callum Camps played as the pivot, getting loads of the ball, everything going through him. So they didn't get to grips with that, Sutton, and they've been so good, you know, having been a 4-4-2 and the wide players working so hard. And, you know, you have to, it has to be so seamless, I think. I think of Burnley doing it in the Premier League, how good they were at one striker dropping in, wide players being disciplined. You've got to know your roles. And with injuries and with a lack of confidence at Sutton United, this was a bit of a bloodbath. It really was. And Madden helped himself to a hat trick. So yeah, I think a few things: shape, return to form of Noyle, well, the aforementioned Madden and Camps. A brilliant victory, and let's not forget Stockport had 12 straight wins recently. So it's been a, what do we call it, a minor blip, but no more than that. And funny enough, what you said at the start, Matt, I just watched the TV highlights this morning and I thought that the reporter said there was four Sutton United fans at Stockport, which I was going to draw.
You're
to
kidding
your
me.
Four. 94.
Oh, right. I was going
to
say.
I was watching it thinking, no, surely there's got to be more friends and family to accumulate more than four. There's got to be. I mean, even when I played at Stockport away, I might have had Uncle Al and a mate coming down from Scotland. There's two. So I was a little bit amused about that. But yeah, obviously, Matt Gray's going to be worried about his job. We know about the budget restraints and all that, but you know, they've been established in League Two for a few years now and done really well, and you know, he shouldn't be immune to criticism, and he'll get that now. He's turned it around before when they've had really tricky spells, and like I said, he's not been helped by injuries, but you know, 6 points adrift now from safety. Stockport conversely, 6 points clear at the top. It's going to be tough, isn't it? And I suppose, yeah, I suppose he's going to have to pull a rabbit out of the hat, isn't he? He's going to have to change something over the next few weeks. Otherwise, it looks inevitable that they're going to be in the National League next season.
Another big victory. This one came away from home. Morecambe's players, Clark, he probably got into the dressing room at Doncaster thinking, yes, we're the talk of League Two this afternoon. Nobody's going to be talking about anything other than our fabulous 5-0 away win. And then they see the Stockport score. Do you want to lavish praise on Morecambe and that David Tutonda goal that Cannon dinned off the bar, or do you want to try and work out how Doncaster lose 5-0 at home?
Nah, let's be positive. Let's talk, you know, how good Morecambe were. And look, they're into eighth. You know, this is Morecambe. I know they've been in League One. you know, in recent seasons. But I still think, you know, if Morecambe are in the EFL at the top end of League Two, that's very, very good for a club of their size. So, no, I think it's terrific. Obviously, they had to change manager recently with Jed Brannan coming in. And, I mean, this is what a thumping away win this is. Pretty much a perfect performance. Morecambe haven't been a possession-heavy team as such. They had less of the ball here as well. But they have got some good young players. Maybe, and they showed in this game how good they can be. You know, get it to me. Little triangles in midfield. Eli King, who plays as the sort of holding midfielder for them. He's only 20. He's on loan from Cardiff. Pretty much put in a 10 out of 10. Scored the first goal, bent one into the bottom corner, released Michael Mellon for the second goal as well. Got an assist later on in the match too. He was brilliant. I think Morecambe have got some really good young players. I was looking at the ages. I think I mentioned this earlier this season, but Mellon, 20, on loan from Burnley. Probably Burnley. Well, Burnley won't recall him, will they? There's no need to. He's not going to walk into their Premier League team. But he's got 13 goals. What a pickup that is. They signed JJ McKeon from Watford. He's 21. He's been excellent this season. Adam Mayer's 18. I think he's come through the ranks. King, on loan from Cardiff, is 20. And Tom Bloxham's 20. He's on loan from Shrewsbury. So, yeah, these are the guys that are carrying Morecambe towards an unlikely promotion push. So, yeah, well done to them. There were some good goals in the game. A couple of set-piece ones as well. Excellent. And Brannan is showing that he's more than capable of steering this team towards a possible playoff berth. I think it's still up against it because there's some big clubs with big budgets that are sort of striving for that spot, but they're in the shake-up. And I think it's because they've got talent in the building. And I think maybe they should just use more of that talent and maybe become more of a possession-based side because they've got the ability.
Yeah, point off the playoffs as things stand. I think the festive period will probably tell us a bit about where they're going because they've got MK Dons at home and then back-to-back away games against Bradford and Notts County. Right, we're nearly done for the day. Of course, I do have a tweet of the week. If you want to follow us on Twitter/X, it's at EFL What The, at What The EFL on TikTok and Instagram too. This one comes from Bailey Cadamatri, or Bailey Ty Cadamatri, as he is on Twitter/X. You know him as Danny's son, Sheffield Wednesday striker, scored in the victory against Sam's beloved QPR at the weekend. He says, At SWFC fans got us over the line tonight. Owl emoji, football emoji. The vibe in the stadium second half from the fans was undash describable. Buzzing to get on the score sheet. That win was all caps massive. Muscly arm emoji. Owl emoji. W-A-W-A-W. Owl emoji. Now we know that the wah-wah is we're all Wednesday, aren't we? Clarkie, does the inclusion of that make up for the fact that he's made up a word in undescribable?
I mean, yeah, it's a good achievement, isn't it, to make up a new word and it
full
kind of dowie,
isn't he? Full dowie.
We know exactly what he means, don't we? In undash describable. What I find interesting is the overuse of the owl emoji. Obviously, he's flanked the wah wah at the bottom with an owl either side. He previously used it in the tweet. He'd also used at SWFC at the start of the tweet, which obviously limits the amount of people that are going to see it. So he's made a schoolboy error there. So it's a little bit messy, but you know, he's buzzing, isn't he? He's living the dream.
And he's got a picture of himself celebrating, which I like, Sam. I think that raises it up a little bit. But Clarkie's absolutely spot on to bring up the point of him not formatting it correctly and thus limiting the number of views that it would get. You'd hope that's something that can be learned in terms of experience.
You do, but I'm 43, and that's exactly the type of thing that I do on a weekly basis. So I'm finding it quite endearing, to be honest. And the owl is one of the best emojis, is it not? It's one of the best animal emojis, I would
suggest. And wah-wah is the best football abbreviation on Twitter.
Well, I'm glad that you brought that to my attention because I was racking my brains as to what it meant about 3 minutes ago. All I could think, they do hi-ho Sheffield Wednesday? I think they do, don't they?
They do, don't they?
So that's all I could think. So I wouldn't have got there. But I'm quite enjoying it. And he's a kid. He's allowed to tweet his celebrations. It's just started for him. Enjoy it. Embrace it because it's soon over.
Not a fan of Sam Monk's in the replies trying to claim credit. Always knew you'd come good. Said it for the last 2 years. Give this lad a chance. You've had that chance and blimey, you've taken it. There you go, Danny Roll. Just bring in at Sam_Monks as you
choose. How young does Danny Roll look, by the way? I mean, he looks like mid-20s. I know he's a bit older than that, but he is a baby face.
Young, attractive and good at his job. I absolutely hate the guy. Right, that's going to bring us to the end of today's podcast. We're going to take a little break over the Christmas period, but we will be back, don't worry, when we will round up what's been happening, who's gone where, who got the sack for Christmas, who's been gifted presents, any other kind of rubbishy puns that you want to make. I'm going to stop now before I do any more. Thanks to Adrian and Sam for joining us today. Thanks to you for listening as well. Remember to spread the word if you can. Give us a nice review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. It all helps more people find the show. Have a great Christmas from all of us here at What the AFL. It is goodbye.